Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, June 17th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more, available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Dr. Kiki.
And behind the board is our revived producer,
Don't speak so soon.
No, not so refreshed.
No.
Not rejuvenated?
Not quite.
Alive?
Well, barely.
Living.
I was here till 4:30 a.m.
Living dead.
Oh, yeah,
Zombie
yeah.
Producer Eric Lang.
There you go.
Don't eat my brains.
That's my job.
You'll have to see Dr. Kiki's Science Hour to find out what he would consume.
That's right.
If he were to eat your brains.
Right.
A little cross-promotion there.
It's a cookbook.
CrazyDigitimes.com. We love them because they just bald-faced reported all kinds of rumors throughout the Apple history. And once again, they are saying that Pegatron, it's a Chinese Shanghai plant, mm-hmm. is going to ship CDMA versions of iPhone 4 starting in Q4.
Yes. I know what that means. That means another rumor.
That's much like Atlantis or Bigfoot or the Yeti. The rumored Verizon iPhone would then be coming sometime in the fall.
The rumored Verizon. And it's something that I know a lot of people on the Verizon network have been looking forward to, or even people who are on the Apple network who don't want to be on the Apple network and are looking at their contracts coming up, looking at switching. And Verizon does, they have said that they have a network that could support iPhone traffic.
Yeah, this is the, you know, I mean, is it Bigfoot? Is it Yeti? Is it, I'm trying to think what myth this.
Sasquatch. I think it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like some people have claimed to have seen. Some claim to have seen it and they have grainy footage and photos.
Yeah,
That's more like aliens. That's more like the little gray men or like
UFOs.
There was
that picture of the Verizon iPhone that turned out just to be a guy in a Verizon iPhone suit. I remember that. But this is actually, a Digitimes article. Because, so take it with a grain of salt. But these things.
How could you tell a Verizon iPhone from an Apple iPhone or an AT&T iPhone? That's what I mean.
Right, you'd have to open it up.
You'd have to open it up. You'd
turn it on and see if it's
connected. And look at
connected.
It. You couldn't just look at it from a distance and say, that man is on Verizon.
That man's dressed in a Verizon iPhone
it's
suit.
If you see a man walking around with an iPhone saying, can you hear me now? Good.
Right, with glasses on and black hair, you know. So the folks over at ZDNet, Larry Dignan, was speculating that if this does turn out to be true, if Pegatron is shipping CDMA iPhones to Apple in Q4, it probably means that Apple would unveil a Verizon iPhone around the time of the Consumer Electronics Show after the first of the year.
Yeah, but why just go to Verizon? If they're going to do CDMA, why not open it up? Like,
yeah,
why not do?
Maybe they would. All we know is they're making a CDMA. Yeah. Maybe they'll send it to Sprint too.
Sprint, T-Mobile.
Well, T-Mobile's GSM.
Oh, that's right.
So you could already give it to T-Mobile, but they haven't. So maybe the exclusivity arrangement ends at the end of this year. After the first of the year, we've got a CDMA iPhone. It goes to Sprint and Verizon, and the GSM iPhone goes to T-Mobile.
It's possible. Are people happy enough with Android? On Verizon.
I can see Verizon offering them some really big super deal to get them to be their exclusive CDMA or their only second exclusive carrier at the start.
And Apple likes to have January events.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They're not doing Macworld anymore, but they do like to, still have an announcement. So maybe they'll show up at CES.
In a Yeti suit.
Steve Jobs in a black turtleneck Yeti suit.
The only difference is that it's a hairy black turtleneck.
Yes, it's an extraordinarily hairy black turtleneck. Yahoo and Microsoft are finally consummating their marriage.
Yes.
It's about time. These two, they said they were going to get together a long time ago. And now, according to Surround S-E-R-O-A-U, Search Engine Roundtable, searoundtable.com.
Roundtable.
That's a weird URL. Not very SEO friendly, actually.
Ironically.
But Search Engine Roundtable pointing to a presentation video, which I looked at, and if it's real, which I have no way of knowing, then it means that Yahoo is preparing all of their clients to transition their ads to the Microsoft platform between August and September of this year.
Right. The Microsoft platform being Bing.
Right. Bing powering the search for Yahoo.
Yeah. I contacted my contact, the head of search and analytics at dig.com, Marshall Clark, asked him to comment on this story, and he said, should be a welcome improvement to the marketplace once Yahoo Bing unify their algorithmic search terms in August or September of this year. With a total combined market share of almost 30%, Yahoo Bing should emerge as a viable contender for both paid and natural algorithmic search. Bing is already pushing Google to innovate through their novel approach to search refinement and UI, and this competition should only increase as Bing migrates these same improvements to Yahoo's much larger search
audience. So Marshall confirming that that time period is right?
Possibly.
I couldn't tell.
I don't know if he's confirming or just going based off of
if that were to happen, this would be a great thing.
It would be great.
From viewing the presentation myself, it looked like August and September would be the algorithm transition period, and October would be when you actually have it fully switched over. But apparently testing is already going on right now, so you may be using Yahoo search and getting Bing results without even knowing it.
Yeah, that's the main thing, is that you wouldn't have any way of knowing it because they're starting to integrate and they'll be doing testing, which means that some of the stuff you might get could be Bing, some of it not. And they're testing to see how it works with the search results.
It might be Yahoo-ing you.
Yes, Yahoo-ing you.
The other thing that was interesting in this presentation, I thought, was they protect the holiday period, November to December. So they said if anything slipped and their deadlines looked like they weren't going to be able to be done by November, they would just put the whole thing off until after the first of the year.
Fair enough. That's good to the employees.
So this is a little inside knowledge to let you know. If you hear these rumors and it says September, October, or August, September, and then it doesn't happen until January, that's why. Because they're like, you know what? We're not messing with the holidays.
Yep.
Also, we see our first ad on Twitter today in the trending topics area. Did you check it out?
I did. I went and I looked at it, and I've been on Twitter a couple of times today before you sent the story, and I hadn't actually noticed it.
Well, it's very... Yes. Discreet. Down in the trending topics area, after the 10 trending topics, doesn't matter which trending topics you have listed, you could have the world, United States, your city, whatever, there's Toy Story 3. And it has a little bug that says promoted by Disney Pixar.
Yeah, and against the traditional background of the blue color, the yellow promoted button, little bug pops up pretty nicely. But against my background, I have this kind of greeny yellow color, and so it doesn't show up at all. So whether or not it pops up as really obvious depends on what you've done to personalize.
That's true. In allowing you to customize your backgrounds, it does play with that.
Yeah. And they're putting it at the bottom of the list, which is interesting. They could very well have put this promoted link that's been paid for. They could have put it right at the top of the trending topics, but they didn't do that.
And they're very fast to say, we're just testing this out to see what you think. If this annoys you, we want to know.
This does not sound like Facebook.
We want to do this in a way that's very unobtrusive.
Yeah.
If you click on the Toy Story 3, then you can see an example of the first paid placement of a tweet into search results, because at the very top is Disney Pixar. You've waited 11 years to see Woody and Buzz again, and it says promoted by Disney Pixar, again in that same little yellow box.
And that is always going to be at the top compared to most tweets that scroll through disappearing.
How is the rest of this list being populated? Are these other people who just mentioned Toy Story 3? It looks like no hashtag or anything. They just wrote Toy Story 3 in
their
tweets?
Yeah, the rest of this is just a search.
Just normal search.
Like if you just typed Toy Story 3 into search, this is what you'd get. In fact, that's a good question.
I just got 20 new tweets since I started searching. Ooh,
if you just type Toy Story 3 into search, do you still get the promoted search? Yeah, you do. So it doesn't matter whether you click on it from the trending topics or whether you click on it or whether you search individually. Disney gets the top tweet. There.
Yeah, the interesting idea behind this is that they are, it's promoted for a while, but then whether or not it stays on the trending topics past the promoted period, I guess what the Disney's paying for, is actually determined by the trendiness of it. So how much people are tweeting about it.
Yeah, they're trying to vet these and say, we don't want irrelevant stuff, because that's when people get really upset. If it just, you know, continuously says Plaxo or Zoloft
or floss.
Yeah.
Your teeth.
Some kind of ginkgo substitute. Anyway, that so I kind of like the way Twitter's going about this. I think it's smart.
I find it very unobtrusive.
Yeah.
Very easy to see.
And this is their, hopefully, their way of making money and staying alive.
And if it works and if people aren't offended by it, then that's great. But we'll see the reaction by the public after people have checked it out for a while.
My way of making sure we don't go broke and stay alive is to tell you about Ford and voice-activated sync.
Oh, you're so good.
It's a problem for a lot of people when they're driving. I've been talking about this all week. Keeping the hands on the wheel. I have seen many examples of this while driving, where people are
not keeping their hands on the wheel.
Yes, holding phones to their hand or leaning down. You ever see that when you've got the car weaving around in front of you? Guy's just kind of leaning down. You're like, oh boy, what's he doing? Is he texting? Is he trying to change the radio? Did he drop his contact? What's going on up there? Well, if you dropped your contact, we can't help you. But the texting and the trying to find the radio station can all be done with your voice on Ford Activated Sync. True hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more, available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. It just listens to your voice. It's voice recognition, and it's pretty good. I was driving around with Leo, and he's able to just talk, normal tone of voice, and say, you know what, call Dr. Kiki. And it picks up the phone, and it calls Dr. Kiki. And she's like, why are you calling me? He's like, I'm just trying out Ford Sync.
I think it's great. I've seen it work myself, and it I've used it. I've used it, the navigation aspect of the Ford Sync, to be able to find a local gas station running out of gas in Leo's Mustang. It works really well.
Yeah.
You ask it to navigate, you tell it where to go, and you say, find a gas station, and it gives you a list of gas stations, and then you say number one, and then it'll direct you there using the voice navigation system.
And it's Bluetooth, so if you've got a Bluetooth-enabled phone, it just pairs up with the phone and you're good to go. If you want to learn more about Sync, go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. It's standard in some Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury models and optional in others. Check it out. Thanks to Ford for their support of Tech News Today. Let's move on to the patenting of the social network.
I can't believe this story. I mean, it makes sense that Amazon now who's received this patent. USPTO has given Amazon this patent that ostensibly was filed originally back in 1997.
Yes, by Planet All, which Amazon acquired in 1998.
Right, and then they closed in 2000.
Yes.
And then just kind of were like, meh.
Here's the patent. A networked computer system, I guess in this case the internet, provides various services for assisting users in locating and establishing contact relationships with other users. Okay, I do that on Facebook. Mm-hmm. For example, in one embodiment, users can identify other users based on their affiliations with particular schools or other organizations.
Sounds a lot like Facebook.
Do that on Facebook. The system also provides a mechanism for a user to selectively establish contact relationships or connections with other users and to grant permissions for such other users to view personal information of the user. Sounds like the privacy settings.
That it does.
The system may also include features for enabling users to identify contacts of their respective contacts. Friends of my friends.
Friends of my friends.
And yes. It...
That's kind of LinkedIn-ish.
May also allow all your information to be given away to advertisers. Oh, wait, no, that's not in the patent. So it is a little different than Facebook.
Very slightly.
Actually, I think that is in there.
And they have been granted this patent now? It's official?
Yes.
It's official.
So, yeah, the USPTO on Tuesday issued U.S. patent number 7739139 for the invention of the social network. It's not called that. What is it called? It's got some
social networking system. So the folks at the U.S. Patent Office, have they used a computer?
That's a question.
Used the internet?
You know, people on Slashdot are making these kinds of comments as well. People are saying, "Oh, the educational system in the United States is terrible, and this is how come we're ending up with people who don't know how to use computers in the U.S. Patent Office." But really, in 1997, that's over a decade ago. When was Facebook actually? like up and running and working. I remember
2005.
So that's only 5 years ago. This but there was well before. But it,
Friendster and many other things. But yeah,
Friendster was probably late '90s. Yeah,
I would have to think something else existed by that point.
And there, arguably, you can argue for different chat interfaces, different you know, IRC type. Systems that could fall under some aspects of this patent. But at the same time, if nobody else has patented it, you can patent it. If it is something that is arguably a system that you can, that you design, you know, it's,
this is the
you can patent it.
You know, this is a good illustration of the problem with the patent system, is that you can patent these sort of generic ideas.
Right.
And computer companies are really pushing for patent reform to change how this is done, mm-hmm. because it costs them money to all go out. And what Amazon's doing here is probably not malicious. They're probably not looking to go and shake down Facebook.
Right.
What these companies do is try to patent stuff so that they don't get sued.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they bought AllPlanet. They've been continuing this patent ever since, trying to get it nailed down so that no one could go after them for any of the technology they took from AllPlanet and used in Amazon.
Which, if Facebook were to patent, they could then go after them for it and then shut down certain parts or charge the money.
I mean, the patent office has to, they have to realize that at this point, they cannot keep allowing patents for things that are
but
so obvious.
But this is the law.
I know.
I talked to patent office people who actually work in the patent office, and they're like, you guys rail on us all the time for doing stupid stuff, but we are just following the law.
And
we're
not
doing our jobs the way they described it. It's not our fault. It's described in a really dumb way.
And it's not necessarily, like you say, that it's obvious. I mean, it took several years after the invention of the internet for Facebook to come around. You know, this thing that we consider the leading social network, it's...
Except it seems right now sort of like allowing, granting a patent for the packaging of a carbonated beverage inside an aluminum can.
Right. Yeah, right.
I mean, which it's been
somebody,
done so many
somebody
times.
Probably has that patent.
Coca-Cola's working
time,
on it.
Yeah. Well, and these things seem... A lot, you know, I mean, a can has been around for a long, long time. This actually hasn't been around that long.
It hasn't.
Relatively speaking.
And we think it has.
But in internet time, we're like, oh, this is old.
Yeah.
You know, come on. And and rightly so. I mean, we should not be able to, you know, nobody should be able to have a patent on this at this point. It's just, it's just too common. So it's just another of the road signs along the way to patent reform. A scintillating topic.
But that's the question.
That we will now talk about for the rest of the show.
Yes. The question, if the patent was initiated in 1997, can it be issued now for something but it's now common, but it was not in 1997. It was very innovative in 1997.
That's part of that system that needs to be reformed, that continuation stuff.
Yeah.
Federal Communications Commission has taken the first steps towards figuring out how it's going to regulate broadband. They had an open meeting yyesterday and voted to, voted to open a proceeding that seeks comment on three options. Here are the three options. We can leave things the way they are. We can reclassify from Title I to Title II with limitations so that we're just regulating net neutrality and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can totally reclassify to Title II and just go regulation crazy.
Yeah!
Do you think that's a setup, these options?
It seems like a setup to me. There are no other options?
We know 282 members of Congress want option one, which is don't do anything different.
Right.
And I think the idea here is let's explore all these things because they've got congressional pressure. They have to pay attention and say, okay, what happens if we don't change anything? Mm-hmm. What happens if we do our limited version? And what happens if we go regulation crazy? And I think they're doing that third option as a contrast to say, look, what we're suggesting isn't all that heavy-handed. It's a very light regulation, and we want to show you what it would be like if we did go regulation crazy. Get that on the books. Mm-hmm. FCC can do what's called a forbearance of regulations, and they have never gone back on a forbearance. Everybody says, oh, well, they can forbear it now, and then a new administration can come in and change it.
But they usually don't.
Theoretically, yes, but it's difficult. It's as difficult to change as this is.
Right.
Right? So if you have a comment on this, whether you support net neutrality or hate net neutrality or have some opinion somewhere in between like me, you can now make public comments. Comments from the public are due on July 15th, 2010. Reply comments are due on August 12th. And the notice of inquiry, as well as instructions for parties wishing to provide comments, will soon be available at broadband.gov. Eric and I were trying to find them earlier, and they're not up yet.
They have not posted it yet, but hopefully soon.
So broadband.gov is the place. You know what? If you've got a strong opinion about this, let them know. Yeah. One way or another.
Mm-hmm. Great. And if you can't find it there, you can always tell your representative.
That's right. You can write your congressman or do both.
And I found this great app called Congress that just it sets you up. You say where you live and it just
It tells you who you can write.
All the bills that have recently been introduced, everything that the bills that are currently that have just been passed. And it tells you who your representative, senator, et cetera, are. And it gives you their phone number. You can hit a button, just boop, and you call your senator. And you're calling them. I love it.
Cool. Do they pick up?
An assistant picks up,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, they'll never pick up.
Someone will pick up.
Microsoft on Thursday unveiled a program to alert banks and online services when accounts they oversee are compromised. It's the Internet Fraud Alert. This is being developed and donated to the National Cyber Forensics and Training Alliance, a group that trains law enforcement agents. The idea is if you're on an anti-phishing work group, you're a security organizer, security researcher, and you find a cache of, I don't know, credit card numbers. Mm-hmm. Right now, you don't have the time or resources to go parse those credit card numbers, figure out what banks they're from, and contact those banks.
Right.
And so the bank has compromised security that it doesn't know about. So what this program will do is allow you to give that information to this technology that Microsoft, to this group that Microsoft's setting up, the Internet Fraud Alert. And the Internet Fraud Alert, with their technology, we'll be able to identify what organizations need to be notified that this information has been made available out on the internet.
That sounds very useful.
It sounds useful.
And I'm glad that Microsoft isn't just keeping it themselves, that they're giving it off to a third party. That's good.
Yeah, well, that kind of, if it's a nonprofit or some other organization that's not just based on a corporation, like they say here, the anti-phishing working group is one, then you have a little bit more trust in the organization, I think.
Yeah, the anti-phishing working group received 410,000 unique phishing reports last year. That's a lot to parse through without help.
Yeah.
So this is pretty important. eBay, PayPal, the American Bankers Association, Citizens Bank, and the Federal Trade Commission are all supporting this new project, and it goes into effect immediately. You can go to ifraudalert.org if you want to find out a little more about it, if you're a security researcher and want to be involved.
If you are a security risk, no.
If you are a security risk, you might need to know about this.
Yeah.
Little thing passed along from joystick.com is that you don't have to spend the $30 for the navigation controller on the new Sony Move device.
What?
Uh-huh. It's because you got to buy the Move separately from the navigation controller.
Right.
The navigation controller is the little nunchuck. You can use your DualShock controller.
There you go.
You just can't hold it. You know, if you're holding the Move in one hand, you got to hold the DualShock with one hand.
Mm-hmm.
But they point out that the X and O buttons are actually replicated on the Move itself. So if you just hold the left side of the DualShock controller, you get the arrow keys and the joystick, and that's all there is on the navigation controller anyway. So
sounds good. Maybe it's not quite as ergonomic.
It's not
maybe as nice.
It's not as nice, but if you want to save $30 or so for, you know, in case you
want to buy another game,
get defrauded, and you gotta pay to restore your credit, you can do it this way. Anyway, it's just a cool little thing to pass along.
Great little link there.
We mentioned last week or earlier this week, I can't remember, about HP coming out with printers where you can email print jobs to them, which is great for mobile. If you want to email something to print out from your phone, you could do it that way.
Yeah.
Now Hewlett-Packard says they're partnering with Yahoo to provide advertising.
This sounds awful.
Now, yeah, of course, every headline is like, HP has planned to spam your printer.
Yeah.
That's not what's going on. What they're doing is HP is going to partner with Yahoo to provide content from U.S. newspapers and magazines so that you could actually schedule regular print jobs to be emailed to your printer.
That so, include localized, targeted
exactly.
advertising.
And so it's the ads would go into that. You wouldn't get ads.
And then you are still having to pay for the ink that is printing those ads and the paper that
you're getting a free newspaper printed out.
I think you're paying more than the actual newspaper cost to buy by the time
you
print those inks and everything.
Depends on how much you're getting printed.
I'd have to see how it works to actually decide whether or not I think it's a great idea. I mean, I personally, if I print something out, I don't want extra ads on it.
I don't think anybody's going to use this. I think that,
I don't think so.
It's much ado about nothing. I like the idea of being able to have an email address for my printer as long as it's just secure and spam-proof.
As long as it's, yeah. You know? Otherwise, it's just page after page after page after page.
But signing up for special Yahoo content.
Yeah, no.
I don't know. Targeted based on users' behavior as well as the content. Eh.
I can see some people. I mean,
I don't care so much about the ads, though.
I can think about some things, but I have my RSS reader, and a lot of times I would just rather read something RSS reader and then decide to print it as opposed to just having scheduled printing,
where everything's
just wasting paper.
I mean, you print ads when you print web pages all the time, so I don't think that's a big deal.
No.
But do you want to have a national music magazine or a newspaper printed regularly? I guess you could order them one by one. I don't know. It just, seems like something we don't need.
Some people might.
But what you do need is money. And if you take photos and you put them on Flickr,
you can now make money.
This is really cool.
Flickr's 40 million registered users are being given the chance to make money from the Getty Images Foundation.
And suddenly we find that Flickr's user base has increased from 400 million to 800 million.
they've been testing this with 100,000 photos taken by professional and semi-pro photographers, and they're now ready to open it up to all Flickr users. You have to opt into the service. Yep. But what it does is it makes your photos available to Getty Images, and then Getty can put those images in their bank, and if people use them, they will pay you an average freelance rate of $150 to $240.
Not bad.
Good.
Yeah,
that's not so bad. It's not piddly.
Do you have to submit images on an individual basis, or like once you set up your account, they will monitor your account for pictures that they might want?
I think that's probably it. I think you opt into the system, it goes into the bank, and then when a picture is up for being used, they contact you. Do you give permission? We'll pay you this much money. And then you say, yeah, go ahead, put it through. And then your picture is on a billboard somewhere, and you've got $100 in your pocket.
Well,
and now you can afford to buy that navigation controller.
Yeah. I wonder if the freelance rate for images that end up in really large nationwide advertising campaigns is $100 to $250.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of questions on ongoing royalties, because I think it is a per use image,
just a use fee.
If you got in the right space, you could stand to make a nice chunk of change off of an image.
Wait, it's $150 per use?
Well, it's $150. Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
I don't know what all the terms are. I haven't dug into that, but the idea is that every time it gets used, you get another check.
Now, do you think
I'm gonna be a photographer now?
Right. How much of a chance do you think amateurs have at really getting their stuff chosen, though? I mean, Getty must already have partners with so many pro photographers.
Well, you know what they were saying in here is what they like about the Flickr photography is that it is done by real people instead of usually by some commercial photo shoot. So you get grittier images. Yeah. You get images that are more realistic. You get images in a lot of areas that would never be photographed because they aren't good for a commercial setting. You get whole areas of the world that are photographed, you know, trains in India and, you know, cars in Zimbabwe and things that generally people won't bother paying a photographer to go set up for stock images. So it makes for a more universal image set than just a U.S. European urban commercial centric.
Yeah. And if you've been watching Flickr at all, there are individuals who are amateurs, just individuals who have their Flickr account that they're good photographers and they have become really well known and made lots of friends on Flickr as a result of the images that they put up there. So I think if there are people who are putting good images out, they are going to be found.
And I just like this last story, which is techno artist Jeff Mills producing a 5-inch CD vinyl single. It's vinyl on one side and CD on the other. So you put one side in, it'll play in your CD player. And on the other side, you got to put it on your turntable, and then it will play the single off the turntable.
Like,
two obsolete technologies in one.
Two obsolete in one.
Does it come with a cassette also? This is so silly. I mean, you got to think that the first time
that'd be
that you
great if it did.
Yeah, the first time
it's
that
wrapped in cassette tape.
The first time that you play this in your CD player with this side down, you completely ruin the vinyl.
It.
Yeah.
You won't ruin the vinyl. I mean, it's not, vinyl doesn't scratch.
Pretty.
It's durable.
Yeah, it's more durable than you think.
It'll last a while. I worked at the radio station at UC Davis for several years, and their vinyl stacks were put through a lot of serious damage.
A lot of ill use.
There was one album that came in that I was thinking this would be perfect for. One album, it was experimental. It came in, the inside of the the cover was lined in sandpaper.
Oh, that's smart.
So that every time you used it, you were scratching the album.
Is that an artistic statement?
It was on one of those artistic things.
Ephemeral nature of man.
Yeah.
So how long have CDs been around? Since the late 70s?
Oh, since the 1800s at least.
CDs, you know, they started to become popular mid-80s.
Yeah. Mid-80s. So you think that if this was a good idea, it would have been done by now.
Not necessarily. I think it's cool. I think it's just for fun, you know?
I remember, though,
it's an objet d'art.
It is. I remember, though, like one of my dad's friends, when CDs first came out, and he was like one of the first of my dad's friends to get a CD player and get CDs, and he's throwing the CDs on the floor. He's like, these things aren't indestructible. They're not supposed to be damaged. Way better than
vinyl. They'll last forever. They'll never die.
We quickly learned
that was not true, and that they were never going to come down in price either.
Yep.
But you know what? You can now put to the test, does vinyl sound better than CD?
On one album. Just flip it.
On the TNT calendar, WordPress 3.0 released today. If you're a WordPress user and you want to get up to date, this is a milestone release. Lots of bug fixes, lots of new features. Check it out. Coming up Monday, June 21st, we will have iOS 4 available for download for all you iPhone users out there. To try out multitasking, or not really multitasking, but something akin to multitasking.
Pseudo-multitasking.
Yeah. And then 3 days later, on Thursday, June 24th, iPhone release day, and we will be covering it. The plans are afoot. We might be down at the Palo Alto store. I'm going to be at the Emeryville store. We're going to be figuring out how to blanket the Bay Area and bring you the latest as it happens.
In the iPhone release.
Will people go crazy? What do you think? Are people going to go nuts for the iPhone? Or is it going to be like big lines?
A lot of people already have iPhones, but yeah, some people are ready.
It was the biggest pre-order ever for iPhone, iPad, anything.
And not everybody who wanted one got one.
Yeah, all those flaws in the
pre-order.
Mm-hmm.
And the pre-orders were suspended. And now if you pre-order, you're not going to get it till July 14th.
So we might have a lot of overnight campers trying to get one of the first models.
Mayhem. All right, let's move on to our voicemail. First one comes from J.M. Quinn, first and only one today, actually. And he wants to know some advice for his website, actually. So listen up.
J.M., 17-year-old entrepreneur and web designer seeking for some help. I'm about to launch Unlimited Case and accessories/headphones/everything-above website. I'm a guy and I hate shopping, so I decided to fill the void of simplicity I feel my shoppers need and feel that my competitors are lacking. I'm getting rid of account creation, no more plethora of promotion emails, no more dreadful online shopping experiences. What I wanted to ask, and I'm sure many other business owners wonder, is what is the best way to pay? Despite my sheer hatred for it, everyone knows PayPal is pretty much a given. But do you like checking out on-site with authorized.net, Google Checkout? What are your favorite ways to pay? Thanks, love the show, and keep up the great work.
So I like the idea of no account. You know,
as long as it's secure,
and no hassle. But you know what? My favorite way to pay is just to pay with my credit card. I think
Yeah,
I've got good fraud protection on it. You know, I can do the one-time use numbers and all that sort of thing. What about you guys?
Same here. Credit card. Even when I'm forced to use PayPal, I have it just set to go straight to the credit card.
I use PayPal. I do. I kind of get annoyed at having to jump up and run and look for my wallet because I don't know where it is usually. So
there's quite a few Google Checkout folks in the chat room.
I haven't used Google Checkout. I have no idea.
Equal amount of PayPal, and then one poor soul who likes to pay by traveler's check. Should make your online shopping.
I think that's somebody just being difficult.
Much more difficult than mine. it seems to be split. I don't know. Send us an email. Give us a call. TNT@twit.tv or 260-TNT-SHOW and let us know if you have a particular preference that you can say, no, this is the easiest and bestest way to pay for stuff online. Gold is also not how you pay for things online. Now you're just being silly.
Now they're being silly, exactly.
All right. On to the emails to TNT@twit.tv. Ryan in South Bend, Indiana says, hey, guys. Wednesday, you talked about San Fran adding requirements for the new cell phone warnings. I think this is great. You suggested that a mom might go for the lowest rated phone to be safe for her kids. I would look at it the other way. I'd get the highest rated, seemingly most dangerous phone to have the strongest signal and fewest dropped calls. I might start glowing green, but at least I'd always be connected.
That's nice. Very good.
Well, because we were talking about how we don't really know what these numbers mean.
Right.
And so we don't know if like a higher SAR rating actually is more dangerous, or if, you know, or where on the scale is like you should try to be under, because what they've said is be under 1.6. The science is not determined on this
yet. The science is not determined, but so far the majority of studies, basically almost every study has come out that is significant, has said there's no link between any brain cancers or anything else and cell phones.
So I like what Ryan's saying is like, use it as a signal strength. But I don't know if I don't know if it has any bearing on that either, actually.
But if you have a really, if you have the highest rated phone, the strongest signal, I mean, you just get on the phone, you call, you get off of it. You don't have to keep calling back.
Or you can use headsets.
Headsets. That's what I think. I mean, if you're a mom and you're worried about your kids, don't worry about the radiation that the phone's giving out. I mean, your kid is probably going to stick the phone in their pocket anyway, and then they're going to get cancer on their butt or something.
Blood cancer is not fun.
Thigh cancer.
Why have people not looked at this yet? You know, you put it in your purse and you hold it next to your lung.
You know why? Because it's by your brain and people freak out. And they're like, oh no, it's the brain.
Just get a wired headset. And if you're afraid of the wireless stuff, don't even go Bluetooth. Wired headset. Yeah. Plug it in. Make your kids use that, and then, I mean, just don't even worry about it. So that's my advice.
There you go.
But don't listen to me.
No, you should. I totally agree. As Jim Didrikson in the chat room said, luminescent children are easier to find.
Oh, that's a good point.
Can you read the next email, Dr. Kiki?
I can read the next email. Dear TNT, here's another issue with rentals. About a year ago, they released Watchmen on DVD. They also released a longer director's cut DVD. However, in my experience, neither Redbox nor Blockbuster or even Netflix has this director's cut version. I like the theatrical version, but if I'm not going to pay the $20 to get the director's cut without seeing it first, if I can't rent it, I'm not going to buy it. So Warner, at least for this customer, you've gotten yourself in a catch-22 by not giving people the option to rent a title. It would also be interesting to see if there's some numbers on how many people would rent a movie in the first week and then buy it in stores right after or a couple of weeks later. Thanks, Dan Ficker.
See, this is why I've said what you should do is you should release your DVDs day and date of the actual movie and sell them to people as they come out of the theater.
I know. Here, you want to buy it?
You've just seen it and you're really super excited and you will get them to buy it when they wouldn't normally.
Right.
Because they just saw it and they're all hyped up.
So excited. That movie was awesome. I would totally want to see it again. Yeah.
Right? Because he's right. Dan's point is exactly right. Who's going to buy a movie if they haven't seen it yet? So rentals are one way to see a lot of movies that you wouldn't otherwise have seen.
Yeah. I don't know. There are some movies, though, that people are just going to buy because they're going to be epic.
Right. And it's not going to matter whether they're available for rent or not. They're just going to buy them anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, Becky, and Sarah, says Sean. Love the show. Last episode, you read an email that mentioned the quantity of new Android handsets being released. While it can certainly be annoying to have a phone be old news in 3 months, I see this as a positive. Consumer choice is always a good thing. Sarah was saying that the Evo and Droid X are too big for her. A smaller phone like the Nexus One Incredible or Samsung Galaxy S would probably be suitable. This onslaught of phones just providing choices between carriers, physical keyboards, manufacturer size, and overall look and feel. The iPhone is a great phone and simple, as you mentioned. However, it only comes on one carrier and in only two colors. And one of those colors you can't even get yet.
I know.
The more choice, the better, in my opinion, says Sean.
I agree. I think that the variety of choice in the Droid network. Do you know anything about evolution and biology? Diversity is a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
Some people are starting to say, wait a minute, it's going to be bad for Android. They're fragmenting too many platforms. But the good platforms will rise above the other ones, and the bad ones won't hurt Android.
Exactly.
Because people don't go out and say, I want to buy an Android phone so much as they say, I want to buy a Droid.
Yeah.
Or a Droid X. Yes. Or a Nexus One or whatever
it is. Yeah, and the majority of platforms are on 2.0, at least at this point in time, getting up into 2.1 and 2.2. But the next release I've heard is going, I think there was a story you had found, the next release is going to be another big jump in the Android platform capabilities. But then they're going to ratchet things down a little bit.
Yeah, they are going to slow down the release schedule.
Yeah.
Apple's got to be glad to hear that.
Well, Android fans are going to be glad to hear that too.
Yeah, it'll make things a little bit easier.
Those people stuck on 1.5. Like, what happened?
What happened? I don't know. I mean, I did buy my Motorola Droid back in October. Was that when it first came out? And I love it, but I am starting to eye these new phones, and I'm thinking to myself, really? I can't buy a new phone already. Really?
And you have 2.0 on your Droid now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want 2.1. Upgrade. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Give me an upgrade.
Everybody's ready for the upgrade.
I'm ready.
So you're not going iPhone 4 then?
I don't think so.
All right. Good. Somebody needs to stay away from the Kool-Aid.
I don't get it. My brain does not work in iPhone.
Really?
That's no.
That's interesting.
I can't do it. iPhone, iPad, I want to be a lot more, I don't know, if things don't work the way I want them to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like the Android because it works for me.
Your brain is not wired like Steve.
It is not. It is not. And I want a freaking keyboard, people.
You're the outlier. You're on the end of the bell curve there.
Yeah, I've been going back and forth with your wife.
Oh, yeah.
On Twitter today.
I'll have to check that out.
We've been going back and forth.
Yes, her brain is definitely wired for Apple and has been for a long time.
Since birth. I was waiting until they would put this technology in my hand. I knew it would come someday.
Born with it, yeah. All right, thanks, Kiki. Always good to have you on Thursdays.
This was fun.
Love having you on Tech News Today. And tomorrow it will be actually. Sarah Lane, Becky Worley, and Jim Louderback will be on the show. I'll be off to podcasters across borders up in Ontario, Canada. So if you're up in Ontario, Canada, keep an eye out for me. I'll be coming your way. TNT at twit.tv is our email address. 260-TNT-SHOW is our phone number. And you can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Thanks to Eric for producing. Thanks to Leo for running the network and letting us do this show. Thanks to you for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.